I come to Berlin as so many of my countrymen have come before. Although tonight I speak to you not as a candidate for president, but as a citizen. A proud citizen of the United States and a fellow citizen of the world.
Oh, you did come as a candidate for president. Come on, Barack. Of course you did. But listeners, if you've been sucked in by the debate over whether the media has given too much coverage to Barack Obama's overseas trip, consider this for a minute. The crowd he drew in Berlin yesterday dwarfed any stadium appearance he has ever made in the United States. This was news. He is more than a candidate around the world. He is a phenomenon, which doesn't mean he's winning, and we'll talk about that too. But let's listen to a few clips from Obama's Berlin address to begin our program today and get journalist reactions from Germany, Lebanon, and the United States. In this next clip, he defends the war on terror and urges the Europeans to deploy more troops to Afghanistan.
This is the moment when we must renew our resolve to rout the terrorists who threaten our security in Afghanistan and the traffickers who sell drugs on your streets. No one welcomes war. I recognize the enormous difficulties in Afghanistan. But my country and yours have a stake in seeing that NATO's first mission beyond Europe's borders is a success. For the people of Afghanistan and for our shared security, the work must be done. America can't do this alone. The Afghan people need our troops and your troops, our support and your support, to defeat the Taliban and Al-Qaeda, to develop their economy, and to help them rebuild their nation. We have too much at stake to turn back now.
Obama in Berlin. More clips to come. The first of our three reactions now comes from Joseph Jaffe, editor and publisher of the German magazine Die Zeit. He's also a fellow at the Hoover Institution at Stanford University in this country. Thanks very much for coming on WNYC. Hello from New York.
Hi, it's a pleasure. Hello from the Austrian-Italian border.
So the photograph of a sea of people in Berlin is on the front page of just about every major newspaper in this country today. Does Europe have Obamamania?
Absolutely. If there were an election in Germany today, he'd win by a landslide, about 67%. He'd win even bigger in Britain. So I think for the first time since maybe, John F. Kennedy, the candidate is the candidate, so to speak, of or in the world.
You wrote in the New Republic this week that Obamamania in Europe is not about politics but desire. What did you mean by that?
What I wrote was he's not so much a candidate as he is a canvas onto which anybody can project his dreams and desires. That's how he has positioned himself. He has a very flexible, pliable identity. Anybody can read himself into Obama. And so he is more of a phenomenon and a projection surface, a canvas, than a real flesh and blood person. The reason I wrote this was, of course, if he is elected president and he has to conduct real policy, he'll cause a great deal of disappointment.
And you wrote that before he gave the speech in Berlin. So when he got to the tough love part there and told Europeans that they need to beef up their militaries and send more fighters to Afghanistan, how do you think that went down, either with the crowds or with the leaders?
I don't think it drew – that was one of his best applause lines, if it drew any. I mean, that's where the clash between the dream – the DreamWorks president and the real president, the 44th president, is going to break into the open the moment, as the president of the United States, the president of the biggest, the most powerful country with very different interests, fighting two wars around the world, will start telling the Europeans, we are doing this for you too, and we want more support from you. That's where it it's going to be tricky, and where the old conflicts between Europe and the United States that beset the Bush period will break out in the open again.
Sorry, what did you say about that as an applause line? Did you say that that was actually one of his big applause lines?
No, it was not an applause line.
No, right. That's what
when
I thought.
When he started doing the Afghanistan stuff, that was not one of his greatest applause lines, nor should we have expected it to be.
Give us some insight. What's the resistance among the NATO leaders in Europe towards sending more troops to Afghanistan? Isn't this a war that they support? Don't they agree with Obama that this is the central fight in the war on terror rather than Iraq?
There's an agreement in principle, and then there's an agreement in practice. Take the Germans, the largest nation in Europe, 82 million people, that in the old days, you know, went to the gates of Moscow and Cairo, okay, in World War II. They now have 8,000 men stationed abroad, and they're already seriously overstretched, which is true for most of the Europeans. So there's a practical issue of not having enough what we call projection forces, nor are the Europeans willing to spend the kind of money to build these forces. To give an example, the United States spends about, you know, between 4 and 5% of GDP on defense. Germany spends 1.3, which is the same as the great state of Luxembourg. So these kind of relations here tell you how it may be an Atlantic alliance, but there's one very, very big member and a lot of small ones.
You note in your article that there are passages in The Audacity of Hope, Obama's book, that read like pure Bush on foreign policy. What did you have in mind?
Well, the lines on there, first he says, we can't always be multilateralists. We have to sometimes act on our own. We can't always wait for the say-so of the United Nations. And yes, we have to preempt by using force against another danger that has not yet materialized, meaning terrorism. And yes, we're going to have to play the world sheriff, even though it's going to be a reluctant sheriff. So that's pretty much the Bush doctrine. And I don't think any American president can speak any differently, because the U.S. is simply in a league of its own in global politics.
It seems to me that Europeans are conflicted about what they want from America. They want it
absolutely
cut down to size as a global hegemon and hope Obama will do that. But they also want to look to it as a beacon of hope. Would you say so?
Yes. I mean, what we want is the United States, which is like us, meaning peace-minded, egalitarian, socially minded, social democratic, meek, more modest, more willing to kind of forgo sovereignty, submit to multilateralist rules. That's how we would feel comfortable with this behemoth in our midst. But of course, it is in the nature of a great power not to behave like small powers. And that is the basic ambivalence or conflict between the Europeans and the United States.
Let me ask you one more thing before you go. The media in this country is having a debate with itself on whether the media has been fawning over Obama on this European trip. What's your observation of that, and how would you compare the European media coverage?
I have some numbers on that, which is that a fairly sizable majority of Americans thinks that the media is trying to help Obama rather than McCain. So those are American numbers. But as far as the European press is concerned, I mean, McCain isn't happening in Europe. We don't even know. I mean, like, we haven't seen that name spelled out in the press for I don't know how long. It is Obamania, and it's Obama on the first page day after day, and McCain has practically disappeared from our radar screen. So if you want to call this helping Obama, I guess the European press is just an avid campaigner for Obama as the American one is.
Or is it just news because he's new?
He's news, and as I said, you know, he allows everybody to project his fondest wishes into him. He's like a soft, silly putty where you can put the imprint of your desires in him. And, you know, and the other guy, McCain, whom I happen to know, is just a tough dude, a war hero, no nonsense. No, I'm not going to cuddle with you. I'm going to be McCain, and I'm going to be the guy I've always been. Big difference here.
Josef Yaffe. He is the editor and publisher of Die Zeit, the German magazine. Thank you very much for coming on with us.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
And we'll talk next to Rami Khoury from Lebanon's Daily Star about the Mideast portion of Obama's trip. First, another clip from his speech in Berlin, the city that used to be famous for its wall.
That is why the greatest danger of all is to allow new walls to divide us from one another. The walls between old allies on either side of the Atlantic cannot stand. The walls between the countries with the most and those with the least cannot stand. The walls between races and tribes, natives and immigrants, Christians and Muslims and Jews cannot stand. These now are the walls we must tear down.
Barack Obama speaking in Berlin. With me now, Rami Khoury from the English language paper serving the Arab world, the Daily Star from Beirut. Hi, Rami. Welcome back to WNYC.
Thank you. Good to be with you.
On the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, did Obama seem to you to walk a line standing staunchly with Israel, but also trying to say that he feels the Palestinians' pain more than most Americans, or am I reading too much into his words?
It's kind of really mixed. I mean, the only thing that I could say where he tried to show that he's actually a little bit even-handed is saying that he would move quickly to address the Arab-Israeli peacemaking, and that was, I think, an important point. But, you know, American presidential candidates talking about Arab-Israeli issues are not going to veer very far from the pro-Israeli line that is the requirement in the United States. And everybody knows that. Nobody expects a candidate to say anything else. But the fact that he did say that he would move quickly to do peacemaking is pretty significant, I think.
And I guess on a policy level, that's the only major difference that I heard him draw with Bush policy per se on the Mideast peace process, that he would be involved with it from the beginning of his term. Is there anything else to add?
There's not much that we can see right now. I think the positions that he's taken are what we would expect from an American candidate in an election year. And that's, I think, for the moment, he's positioned himself pretty well. He's obviously trying to solidify support among the pro-Israeli and Jewish community in the United States. But at the same time, he's trying to say that the old policies are not going to work. And in this area, as well as other things, there needs to be change. And the change is, in his view, manifested by a more activist and even-handed American policy.
That pledge of involvement, is that different from what we're hearing from John McCain?
Oh, I think so. I think McCain is more of the traditional Republican perspective. I think the focus of Obama's Middle East peacemaking commitments, I think, is more clear and slightly more urgent. That's the impression that we get.
Do you think that Obama gets the complexities of the Israeli-Palestinian situation? Remember, he made that gaffe in Washington speaking to the Israeli lobby AIPAC last month, where he said he was for an undivided Jerusalem as the permanent Israeli capital. And that actually went beyond the Israeli position, which puts the status of Jerusalem in play. And Obama had to climb back from that. Was that a sign that he has a steep learning curve ahead of him?
I don't think it's a steep learning curve, but, you know, the Middle East is a place where words and phrases carry a lot of symbolism. The Israelis prefer to talk about a united Jerusalem, meaning it's one city and it's their capital and they're in charge. I think when you talk about undivided, that's a little bit more ambiguous. And also, he's clearly said that the status of Jerusalem has to be negotiated by the parties themselves. So, yeah, I think there is some learning that has to be done. I think it's important to notice that some of the people he's bringing around him, like Dennis Ross, for instance, don't have a very good track record. I mean, they have tremendous experience, and they're, you know, committed Americans, they're experienced mediators, but their track record is one of cumulative failures on Arab-Israeli peacemaking. So I think we need to be very careful to watch who he brings on board. If he's just going to bring back the same old people who've done 20 years of failure in Arab-Israeli peacemaking, that's a bad sign. But he's not going to make any of these signals now during the campaign. I think that's the important thing to recognize. What candidates do is different than what presidents do.
Listeners, some of you have started to post, and I want to invite everybody to post on our webpage about Obama's trip to the Middle East and to Europe. How did Obama do? How did the media do? How did anyone else do? How about Obama's trip to Europe? What did it mean? What did it mean in terms of media coverage? What did it mean in terms of the impression that he made or that you think he made? Go to WNYC.org and click on Brian Lehrer Show, and we'll read some of these on the air. By the way, Rami, how is the peace process? Olmert and Abbas have been making some noises I've seen in the press lately, like they are closer to an agreement than anyone's ever been. Does it mean anything?
We don't know. I think they have a lot of impetus to a lot of reason to actually try to reach an agreement. The idea that they can reach a significant, substantial, comprehensive agreement that's also credible in this short period of time is slightly romantic. So I don't think that anybody expects a complete peace package. What they probably can do is come up with a statement of principles, a kind of a broad outline statement about certain principles of a settlement, a comprehensive permanent settlement, leaving the really tough issues to be negotiated still. But we've done that before. They did that at Camp David. They did that at the Oslo process. I mean, there's been many situations where people make these broad commitments, but they leave the details to the end. And we have to negotiate the details, the specific details of how do you resolve the Palestinian refugee problem? How do you resolve the issue of Israel's need to be recognized by the Arabs to have a full, comprehensive, permanent peace, end of claims, end of conflict, equal rights for Israelis and Palestinians. These are big issues. They won't be addressed by people like Olmert and Mahmoud Abbas, whose credibility is extremely thin right now.
What did you think of Obama in Iraq? Of course, he had been kind of going back and forth, even with some of his supporters in the United States in recent weeks. How did he do there? What did he say there that was new?
I don't think he really said anything new. I think just the fact that he was there was important for him. But the whole thing was really not about Iraq. It was about Chicago. I mean, it was about domestic American politics. Whether he was in Iraq or Israel, Palestine, Afghanistan doesn't really make much difference. This was a domestic American journey, a political journey. It was designed to shore up his credibility and his credentials in foreign policy. And like most things in American electoral campaigns, it's all about imagery and marketing and impressions rather than about substance. So clearly, this is an area where he feels vulnerable, a foreign policy, and he needed to, to get those pictures out there
right.
In the Middle East. So
something. And we'll talk to an American political reporter in a couple of minutes about how she thinks he did from a domestic standpoint. But before you go, Rami Khoury, editor-at-large for Lebanon's Daily Star, we saw the ecstatic reaction he got in Berlin. How do you think different facets of the Arab world received his Middle East stops?
You have two very different audiences in the Middle East, in the Arab world at least, that I know best. You have the small strand of people who follow American politics, who read what these guys are saying, and they understand how American politics work. And I think a lot of people at that level like Obama. I mean, everybody I've talked to in the Middle East, literally everybody I've talked to in the Arab world, likes Obama because they see him as a change from Bush and the neocon policies. But at the mass level of public opinion and ordinary people, there isn't a really strong perception of either of the candidates because there's predominantly a sense of skepticism. People have had hope before. New president in the U.S. is going to do something and bring peace unto the Arabs and the Israelis, etc. That sense of hope has been completely shattered by the last 25, 30 years of modern history in the Middle East and U.S. Middle East relations. So there's mostly skepticism at the public opinion level, but an intriguing anticipation at the level of the professionals and the people who follow policy. And I must admit, based on my recent visits in the U.S. and talking to a lot of political people, I think that Obama does represent something new in foreign policy as well as he does seems to in domestic policy. I think we should not make any judgments on the basis of what these guys are saying during the campaign, because we know that during the campaign, they say what they have to say to get elected. When they're in power and the balance with the Congress, et cetera, will create a new situation. So
in 30 seconds, new in what way, in your own opinion?
New in both substance and style, I think. I think you're going to get from an Obama administration a more focused attempt to really come to grips with the core issues in the Middle East, the Arab-Israeli conflict, as well as other issues, and try to reposition the U.S. to be a much more activist but credible interlocutor and mediator and facilitator, keeping its strong commitment to the security of Israel, but also making it clear that Israel is not the only issue. There are other issues, and Israel's security is actually served by a reasonable peace, which is the position that most Americans and I think most Israelis take as well. So it needs courageous leadership, and I think we're maybe likely to get it.
Rami Khoury from the Daily Star of Beirut, thanks a lot.
You bet.
And we will talk to U.S. journalist Karen Tumulty, the national political correspondent from Time, traveling with Obama in just a minute after one more clip from his Berlin speech about the U.S.
I know my country has not perfected itself. At times, we've struggled to keep the promise of liberty and equality for all of our people. We've made our share of mistakes. And there are times when our actions around the world have not lived up to our best intentions. But I also know how much I love America. I know that for more than two centuries, we have strived at great cost and great sacrifice to form a more perfect union, to seek with other nations a more hopeful world. Our allegiance has never been to any particular tribe or kingdom. Indeed, every language is spoken in our country. Every culture has left its imprint on ours. Every point of view is expressed in our public squares. What has always united us, what has always driven our people, what drew my father to America's shores is a set of ideals that speak to aspirations shared by all people, that we can live free from fear and free from want, that we can speak our minds and assemble with whomever we choose and worship as we please.
Now, Time Magazine national political correspondent Karen Tumulty, traveling with the candidate on his trip, now en route from the airport to the city of Paris, and on a cell phone, low on battery, I understand. So let's see how much we can get in before it gives out. Hi, Karen.
Thank you. I am indeed on the press bus, sitting next to none other than NPR's own Don Gagne.
Hi, Don. So could it backfire on Obama that he looks good to Europeans? You know, American voters are often suspicious of that kind of thing, rather than candidates who stake out somewhat oppositional stances toward the Europeans.
You know, I think there is some danger of that, and certainly some danger of almost going over the top on this trip, given the fact that he is not yet, you know, even officially the Democratic nominee, much less an incumbent president. But I think that there's a change in the political climate than 4 years ago when it was a, you know, big rap on John Kerry that he looked French. If you look at some of the polling, for instance, some of the stuff that the Pew Foundation has done lately, it shows that Americans are very, very concerned about the fact that they think that this country has lost a lot of respect in the world. And in fact, for the first time since Pew started asking the question, a majority of Americans have cited this as a major problem. So I think the upside here is greater for Obama than the downside.
Rami Khoury, our last guest, said this was all more about Chicago than it was about Iraq, even when he was in Iraq, and throughout the trip, really. It's about campaigning to Americans. Do you agree with that analysis? And in your estimation, how do you do?
I absolutely agree with that analysis because, the big place where Obama is lagging behind John McCain these days is in the question of whether he is capable of being a commander-in-chief. And I think that what he is trying to do is let voters see him on the world stage, let him see him dealing with the troops, let them see him standing shoulder to shoulder with other world leaders, and judge for themselves whether he's got the heft and the toughness to fill the job.
Right. So the press. Well, I don't know. I guess the follow-up is your impression of whether he did that, or can't you tell by traveling with him?
Because what I am seeing from here, you know, not knowing how these pictures and images and sound bites are going over back home in the United States, what I'm seeing is just an extraordinary response wherever he goes, whether, you know, it's the King of Jordan himself jumping in his car to drive Obama to the airport, to the quite literally thousands of people who were lining the streets in Berlin, just hoping to get a glimpse of it.
Meanwhile, the latest major poll out shows that Obama has actually slipped in the last week or so vis-a-vis McCain, and McCain has taken a lead, and a very small lead in some battleground states where they were tied. But it's not like this European trip has made Americans go, oh, wow, at least judging from this one poll.
Going to really know how this trip goes over for a little while. Again, whether, you know, Obama struck just the right note or whether, you know, Americans look at this and think, you know, this is just all a little bit too much.
So from our website, a commenter writes, one or two well-placed jokes will turn this media slow news summer feast into what it obviously is, the Let's Play President World Tour. You know that people here are debating and the media is debating with itself over whether y'all are just kind of fawning too much over Obama or even just covering it too much because you didn't cover McCain's trips in the same way.
You know, I think that that is a valid criticism. But the fact is, again, being here, what we're seeing is in and of itself a pretty remarkable story, given the fact that this is a man who is 46 years old, a first-term senator from Illinois who, you know, most people had never even heard of 4 years ago.
So when does he come home?
The schedule as it stands right now is to touch down back in Chicago sometime on Saturday.
And meanwhile, poor John McCain went to give a speech in support of offshore drilling on an offshore oil rig. And guess what they had? An oil spill.
It does sound like, not even the weather is cooperating with Senator McCain this week.
All right, Karen Tumulty, national political correspondent for Time Magazine. Thanks for coming on with us. Enjoy Paris.
Oh, I've always dreamed of spending an afternoon in Paris in a filing center.
Thanks a lot. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. A lot more to come this hour, including the United Arab Emirates building what they anticipate will be the world's first carbon-neutral city. Stay with us.